Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of one David Duenas. I'm your co-host, Steve K9 Kim. And joining us, as always, from the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. Gabe, this weekend, I think it is perhaps the most anticipated fight for the rest of 2014 in Atlantic City. Should be a dynamic, intriguing matchup.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's the last good fight of the year. I think Pacquiao Algieri's, people think it's a foregone conclusion. You know, probably the odds are saying the same. But I think that's still a very intriguing matchup. I could be wrong, and it could be the great white hype. But I tend to think Algieri has much more substance. We'll get to that fight. This fight, I'm very intrigued, and I usually don't say that about, you know, Bernard Hopkins fights. But, you know, he does like the Swiderman, you know, Matt Swider said on Twitter this weekend, you know, he's pretty much going to play defense the whole fight, and that's what he does at this age. But Hopkins is intriguing on a lot of levels. He's a 49-year-old fighter who isn't just kind of eking along at the beatings end of the game, but he's still at the very top of his game, facing one of the most dynamic punchers, but a guy with a lot of question marks surrounding him. This fight has got so many questions, so many layers to it. I'm very excited for it. I can't wait.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to get your pick in now, get on the record, get on the 8-track, get on the cassette tape, get on the DVD or the Blu-ray. You can call in at 347-215-7598. We'll open up the phone lines in about 15 to 20 minutes. Once again, that number, 347-215-7598. If you want to send in a question via Twitter, you could do so at Gabriel_Montoya and at Steve UC and Live. But let's get started with round number one from Atlantic City, live on HBO. It's the showdown at 175 for the WBO, WBA, and IBF light heavyweight titles. Sergey Kovalev at 25-0-1, 23 knockouts, takes on the ageless wonder from another planet now. It's the alien Bernard Hopkins with a ledger of 55-6-2, 32 stoppages. And beginning this HBO broadcast, the co-feature at welterweight, the hard-hitting Louis Abreu takes on the boxing Saddam Ali. Gabe, Sergey Kovalev, Bernard Hopkins. I'm going to be very, very blunt about this. I think it's going to be a difficult fight. I think it's going to be awkward at times. But you know what? I'm going to go right on the record. I think Kovalev is underrated technically. I don't believe this is just a bigger, younger version of Kelly Pavlik. I think he has more dimensions. And I do think the presence of one John David Jackson in the corner, who has a very intimate knowledge of Bernard Hopkins, will play a role. And I think the key is twofold for Kovalev. Number one, don't aim for the head. Try to hit shoulders, arms, elbows, hips, thighs, but just continue to make contact with Hopkins, but also keep his distance. Don't get into the Venus flytrap. And if he does that, which I think he will, I think he'll do enough to outpoint Bernard Hopkins.
I think he could even put him down. You know, he's an awkward guy, Kovalev. He can move backwards and punch, you know, while on the move. I think his power is very underrated. The thing is, as you pointed out in your article on UCN, is that Hopkins is a master of tucking that chin behind his shoulder and giving you an angle. And also kind of, you're never quite sure if he's going to come forward or come back. He's very cagey in there. His footwork is really second to none. It's right up there among the very, very best. And I think that, I agree with you. It's going to be an ugly fight that Kovalev is going to have to pound out. And it's interesting. You look at their careers, and you know, Bernard has fought everybody. He's got all the experience. But in recent years, and he hasn't fought that often, twice in 2013, he's fought once in 2014. The guys he's fighting, Tavares Cloud, who seems to have really fallen off a cliff here in recent years, Chad Dawson, that was, you know, a loss, and that was kind of a guy that seemed motivated to pound one out. But Cloud, Carl Murat, and Bebut Shumanov, I would actually say Kovalev is much more skilled than those guys, maybe not as experienced, but to me, what he brings to the table, a lengthy amateur background, rocks in either hand, and then the cornerstone of it all that's bringing it together is John David Jackson.
I think that Kovalev, this
whole thing.
Gabe, just my opinion, I think Kovalev's technical skill is being undervalued here. And I think that
there is
a natural belief that anyone that punches doesn't have any craft. I think Gennady Golovkin suffers from that also. That if you are just knocking guys over, it's just brute strength, that there's no actual thought process, there's no method to the madness, there's no real technique. I disagree. These guys that come from Eastern Europe that fought in the former Soviet Union / Russian Eastern European amateur system, these guys have vast amounts of amateur experience, much more than a lot of our U.S. fighters who nowadays simply don't travel overseas, don't have a lot of success at that international open class level. Kovalev may not have the amateur pedigree of Vasyl Lomachenko, but he's still very, very solid. But here's what worries me if I'm a Kovalev supporter. Going back to the start of 2012, when he started to come into our consciousness, these are the number of rounds he's fought while he's just knocking guys over like dominoes, Gabe. TKO 2 against Darnell Boone. TKO 3 against Lionel Thompson. Gabriel Campillo only went 3. Cornelius White only went 3. Nathan Cleverly went all the way to the 4th. Ismail Salak was blasted out in 2. Cedric Agnew actually survived all the way to the 7th. Blake Caparello didn't get past the 2nd. Gabe, if you're Bernard Hopkins, you got to think, let's take this guy out to the deep ocean and let's see if he can swim. And quite frankly, I've never seen, at least during this U.S. run, when he's been televised on various forms, Sergey Kovalev. I want to see what happens coming into the middle rounds when there's actually a modicum of doubt as to how much he's actually dominating. I think that's one of the more fascinating levels or fascinating aspects of this fight, is how will Sergey Kovalev deal with the fight that going into the 7th round is 3-3 or 4-2 in either direction. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I'm curious. And, you know, and that would alarm me. But, you know, some of those names, I mean, people can dog Cleverly, but he's a quality guy. He may not have been, you know, Superman or Scrap Iron Johnson, but the way that Kovalev has gone through these guys, I would be more concerned if he was going rounds with all of these guys and going the distance. But instead, you know, he shows his class or that he's a step above. It's kind of like Golovkin. It's, you know, with Rubio, a lot of people, you know, Nathan Lekowitz was saying, don't be surprised Rubio gives this guy trouble and goes the distance. Boom, he blasts him out of there like no problem. I think there's something to be said for that. It's not always who you face, but how you face them. And Salak, there's a lot of people that thought that guy was really quality and was going to go somewhere. And boy, he went right through him. Agnew was another guy that, here's the thing, he doesn't face a lot of big punchers. And I wonder about that. I want to see what happens when he does face this adversity that he's going to face on Saturday. And if Hopkins is landing some clean shots on him, landing some right hands or clashing, you know, crashing into him afterwards and then giving him the old elbow or, you know, locking up his arms and making one of them go dead because he hits him with a pressure point lock. All that stuff is going to be exciting because it's, you can see he's got all the punches. He's got good footwork. He seems to be defensively sound, Kovalev. I want to know how he takes punches. I want to know that endurance, but also the gray area. How does he deal with a grappling kind of ugly fight that he's going to have to find a rhythm in? And sometimes, you know, just little bits of rhythm, not, you know, periods of rounds where everything goes his way. Those are the big questions on the table.
Gabe, if you look at the front side of Sergey Kovalev, the right-handed fighter, I think he's actually very crafty with that jab. He can stick it like a spear. He's also probing with it. He can lay it out there almost like a Kostya Zoo. He uses it as a rangefinder. And then he could use it as a telephone pole jab, a shotgun jab with a lot of power. I think it's going to be paramount that he keeps his distance because once Hopkins controls tempo, it's like this vortex that you could never get out of. Two notes about Bernard Hopkins, and you said, how does Sergey Kovalev handle real punching power? Gabe, as it relates to Bernard Hopkins, and I mentioned this on Twitter yesterday, and this is a long time ago, and we're literally talking about the second four-year term of Bill Clinton when this was the truth. There was a time when Bernard Hopkins was the executioner, and he was actually a very good and exciting offensive fighter. And, folks, I'm being dead serious about this because if you look at the first half of his middleweight run, he was blasting guys out in record-setting fashion against Steve Frank, Joe Lipsy, William James, and he was a very good offensive fighter. Gabe, that guy does not exist anymore. In fact, the last time he scored a clean knockout was a very dubious one, according to a lot of people, against Oscar De La Hoya with the body shot in 2004. So that's a full decade.
Yeah.
Also, Gabe, I find it interesting that you think that Kovalev might be able to floor Bernard Hopkins, because I believe Bernard Hopkins has never hit the deck officially. Let me just say this. If he does not stop Hopkins, but he's able to put him on the floor legitimately, that in itself, to me, is a great achievement, because not only is Bernard Hopkins defensively sound, he has very good eyes, his reflexes are still very sharp, and like I said, he tucks that chin in a way where he does not put himself in harm's way. I think that in itself would be very, very eye-opening. But I got to give Bernard Hopkins credit. There's a lot of people that are so sour on Hopkins that they don't want to see any fight that he's involved in. But let me just stick up for him in this regard. I'm hearing a lot of fighters now past the age of 34, 35 who have a certain title or a cachet, them and their people and also members of the media that want to wave pom-poms for certain guys say, well, now that he's kind of old, there's no expectation that he should fight tough guys. Bernard Hopkins, Gabe, at age 49, coming on to 50 in January, is taking on an absolute murderous puncher in his physical prime. That in itself, I think everyone should tip their cap to Bernard Hopkins.
I mean, yeah, I think there's no question. Actually, Hopkins has been down before. Segundo Mercado put him down. But again, this has to go the way, way back.
Good call.
He put him down twice in their first fight that ended up being a draw. 1994, my friend. That's a long time.
Quito, Ecuador. I remember watching that on Showtime,
yeah.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, he's learned since then how to stay on his feet, apparently. Bernard is second to none in terms of having multiple game plans, but I think at this point, none of those game plans are being extremely, offensive-minded. He's going to use a jab, he's going to use, the 1-2, or nowadays it's more like the 1, and then he kind of gets away. It's going to be incumbent on him to just kind of stay away as well, and so I think it's the long-range game and who's able to establish a jab and get off, a cross here and there, who can get to the body first is going to be interesting. But at the same time, it's incumbent on Kovalev to win that kind of mid- to long-range battle but push the pace and get Hopkins either moving a lot or throwing back a lot and getting into exchanges. The first six rounds is where the fight is going to be won, I think, in many respects. John David Jackson.
Another thing John David talked about is like we want to treat this guy like an old guy and hit him in places an old guy doesn't want to get hit. And the one thing I've noticed about Sergey Kovalev, when we talk about concussive power, who really has home run power, not just warning track strength, is if you look at some of the knockdowns that he scored, specifically against Blake Caporello, and we can argue about the quality of Caporello all day, Gabe, those grazing right hands to the body, they didn't even land all that solidly. That in itself tells me that Sergey Kovalev is about as radioactive as Chernobyl. And no one's ever really attacked the body of Hopkins in recent years that I can recall. And that's one of the things that I think they're going to have to do is, number one, work in volume, set a quick tempo, and then if you can, get to that body. And even if those punches are blocked or deflected, I think that Kovalev has to set a steady pace because one thing about Bernard Hopkins, he has a way of hypnotizing guys like Bivet Shumanov and Tavoris Cloud, who simply did not have the boxing IQ to realize sometimes activity for activity's sake against Hopkins will be effective, much more effective than just staring at him and being mesmerized 3 minutes at a time. Gabe, I'm on the record. I'm going with Sergey Kovalev, and I may eat crow once again because of Mr. Hopkins. Who are you tabbing on this main event on HBO this weekend?
I'm going to go way, way out on a limb. I'm going to go Kovalev late stoppage.
Whoa.
Late stoppage.
Really?
I think he's going to get it done to the body. He's going to hit Hopkins. Hopkins, I don't think – I'm not going to take it away from Kovalev and say he's an old man. He's 49 years old. you know, we could say what we want about that, I guess, you know, without getting sued. But
He's an alien, Gabe. Come on.
Yeah. Well, you think Lance Armstrong would get away with that one? And you know, but I think, you know, he pushes the pace and gets to the body, comes upstairs, and I think it could be an attrition kind of thing. But I think he puts him down at least once, catches Hopkins. You know, Pascal seemed to catch Hopkins strange and caused him trouble and made me question whether or not he takes a punch very well anymore. So, I'm going out on a limb. I'll go Kovalev late stoppage. Why not?
One of our listeners here tweeted at me, and he points it out, and I want to thank them, Bradley Edwards. He says, Pascal dropped B-Hop as well. So, yes, that is duly noted. Gabe, the semi-main is a welterweight battle. It's the thawing of the Cold War between Top Rank and Golden Boy Louis Abrego against Saddam Ali. I think it's very simple. Ali will win certain segments of this fight very easy. He's a much more skilled guy, much faster, much quicker, much sharper. But there's a chink in the armor, the chin. He doesn't catch very well. Louis Abrego can do one thing. That is bang. I think Abrego eventually catches up, and I think his awkwardness works to his advantage. I like Abrego TKO between rounds 5, 6, or 7.
That's it's a tough fight, you know. Ali, I agree with you that the chin is not the best. And even, you know, so much the opposition isn't the greatest. I mean, he's such some journeyman kind of guys and got him out of there. But, I mean, he hasn't faced that young kind of strong dude. This is the big test. Abrego can be outworked. He's, you know, been beaten before, but by a top-quality fighter in Tim Bradley. He's not a chinny person. I think he hits hard enough to get the job done. I tend to agree with you. I think experience, Abrego's not a guy like, you know, ready to be taken. He's an experienced, dangerous veteran with an awkward style. I think Ali can outpoint him and move around, but I don't think he hits hard enough to get the respect. So I think it's Abrego pounding out a decision.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you can do so at Gabriel_Montoya, at SteveUCNLive. Let's get to some of the tweets. Bradley Edwards once again chimes in. He says, Kovalev by late stoppage. Mr. Edwards, you are now on the record. And here's Gaddy Fan. He asks us, Steve, if you're HBO, who are you rooting for on Saturday night? Can Hopkins, as a champ at age 50, create a big pay-per-view with someone? Gabe, I don't think there's any doubt. In the back recesses of their mind, if they were completely honest, and they would never admit this, the bottom line is the future is not in the 50-year-old guy. The future is in Sergey Kovalev, who's still in his mid-30s, right?
Yeah. No, no question. I mean, that's the guy you want to have win this, and that's the guy you're praying knocks out Bernard Hopkins. You can mark it off of that for a long, long time. And also, you know, if it's an ugly fight and Kovalev wins, you may know this better than me, is there a rematch clause? Because you can get stuck with two stinkers in a row. I mean, Hopkins is the ultimate win this one, look good in the next one. So I think, yeah, I think the powers that be would want Kovalev to win, and I think it's better for the business of boxing. It's more exciting fights to be made with Sergey Kovalev than Bernard Hopkins, bottom line.
Gabe, I think there's an amendment to that old George Benton statement you just quoted. Win tonight, look good never. Here's a tweet from Alex. Will the Crusher get full credit if he knocks out B-Hop? Gabe, I don't care what age it is. You still got to be the first guy to have the gumption and the skill and the daring and the guts to push a guy off a cliff. Because a lot of guys are, like I said, hypnotized by the mystique, and they play into the mind games of Hopkins. If Sergey Kovalev puts out Hopkins, yes, damn right I think he gets all the credit in the world.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. You know, you gotta give credit where credit's due. He's facing Bernard Hopkins, and granted, you know, they've kind of, I mean, I guess it's sort of neutral ground. I mean, you know, I don't know if Hopkins has ever really been the biggest draw on the planet. I think it's more about the market that they've developed over there, the main events, in terms of where they're fighting. But, yeah, why wouldn't you give him credit? I mean, Hopkins is a master, and he's able to sustain himself to 49 years of age fighting at a top level and keeping a belt and even navigating the politics well. so that he's still relevant at age 49. That's probably just as incredible as the fact that he's still fighting at a high level. I don't see why you would take anything away from a Kovalev win, especially if it's an impressive stoppage, man.
Oh, and we got a call here from the red phone from the White House, the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. If white man Kovalev knocks out Hopkins, what do you think the chances are he could become an A-side attraction? Now, let's hold on. Before we answer that, Gabe, we have to reference that. I guess Bernard Hopkins today was quoted as saying, I'm not getting the mainstream attention or the credit I deserve for my accomplishments at this age because I'm black. It's a racial thing. You know, Gabe, I guess you can argue that all you want, but I can also argue, and I know some people may not like this, but if he wasn't an African-American, would he be pressed more for not doing drug testing and fighting effectively at age 49? It goes both ways, doesn't it?
It does. I'm glad you said it. I just don't understand why that question isn't asked. I don't understand it. I mean, listening to the press conference or the conference call, and people don't – you know, there was a video of somebody asking Kathy Duva about it, but, you know, I had heard, and maybe they, you know, the deal was already made, and I don't know. I'm not calling Kathy a liar, but I had heard that it had been broached, the subject, and that it had been turned down. I could be wrong.
Gabe, I believe that they asked and they said, you need this fight worse than us. Kovalev needs a star-making fight. If you want to fight Hopkins, there will be this type of testing, which is the regular standard cookie-cutter commission testing. Take it or leave it. And I don't believe that Igis Klimas, Sergey Kovalev, or Main Event was in any position to fight back. That's my opinion.
But again, you know, and this is, you know, it goes back to the regulators regulate. And Kathy said that it's not our job to clean up the sport. And maybe it isn't their job to say that, the product that you're selling on TV is clean or not. Maybe it isn't. But in New Jersey, where this fight's happening, you know, they say that they've got the top, the drug testing in the country. They take hair, they take blood, and they take urine. So I expect them, if they're going to claim, you know, and this was the guys that shot down when the Association of Ringside Physicians earlier this year came out and said, hey, no more TRT2Es, therapeutic use exemptions for testosterone. It was Jersey that came out and said, whoa, I think that's going way too far. We're still going to give TRT2Es. You just need to improve the testing. Well, I put them to that challenge. They need to test for EPO. They need to do carbon isotope ratio testing and whatever hair testing is available. And I would test for HGH as well. And let's see what's up.
Gabe, going to the question of Mr. Kennedy here, I believe that if Kovalev does knock out Hopkins and it's in spectacular fashion, given the fact that he has an exciting style, it's a notable historic victory to be the one that kind of fishes out the alien, and the fact that Kathy Duva and Main Event know what they're doing, yes, I do believe that he can become a major A-side attraction if all that should happen.
I don't see why not. People really already dig him. You know, you see him ringside, and you know he's smiling for the camera, and he's kind of like Triple G in that regard. That we like the fact that his quote's a little bit broken, but they know exactly what message to get across with him. I really like him. I think his personality is genuine. I really like JDJ too, his trainer. You know, I just think that's a dude that I could talk to all the time about boxing. He's kind of like Manuel Stewart in that regard. Very smart. Very well-spoken about the sport, like just really understands the game and how to explain it, which not many people do. So overall, I just think the package, you know, in Main Event, I just, when Kathy Duva wins, I always think that the sport wins a little bit with her.
You know, I just think it's funny that John David Jackson said, well, the fact that my guy doesn't understand all that much English is an advantage because most of the stuff that Hopkins might say, and he's going to say stuff in the upcoming days, will go right over his head, and I've told his people, don't even translate it. So you can't play mind games with a guy who doesn't necessarily understand the dialect. Go to the phone calls now. Again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We're here for 90 minutes. We got another hour and 6 minutes to go, so go ahead, jump on in. Give us your prediction. Hopkins, Kovalev, get on the record now. Gabe, let's hit the phone lines.
All right. In the 585, you're live on the next round. 585.
Hey, guys. Can you hear
Just yes, barely. Who is this? Speak up, please.
Oh, this is Jake from up in here in State Farm in Rochester, New York.
Oh, Jake, what's going on from State Farm?
It's not bad up here. It's a little cold. Basketball season, Syracuse basketball, but cold. It's not that bad. I'd like to ask you, in terms of the Kaneo-Cotto negotiations, I remember you last week in the show, you said that HBO is looking at this May 2nd date as, quote, the takeover. Cotto has recently expressed interest that he wanted to fight in June in New York for the Puerto Rican Day Parade. Do you see that upsetting the apple cart at all?
You know what I think this is, guys? I think this is gamesmanship, and I think this is negotiating. And I do believe that this fight will be consummated. But I think you have a battle of egos. I mean, both of these guys are A-sides in their own regard. They both have very, very vast fan bases. And now they are fighting for a lot of different things here. And obviously, it comes down to money. But when you have a fight of this nature, where two guys have absolutely been promoted well, now the ancillary issues come into play. And for Miguel Cotto, negotiating this fight, Gabe, wouldn't you say is the polar opposite of being able to dictate to Sergio Martinez? Because at the end of the day, Canelo does actually bring a lot to the table financially.
Yeah, no question. You know, it was you know, there was like a hostile takeover was what happened with Martinez. You know, they're just like, this is
like a mugging.
This is how it's gonna, yo, dude. You know, even like the way they did the drug testing, like right at the last second, you know, just bang. You know, they just controlled everything. And most people don't know that that fight was USADA tested, but it happened like right at the last moment. You know, last I think 6 or 8 weeks somewhere there. But I think it's, you know, you got to respect the brand that Canelo. You know, even though he's got a loss, you know, Cotto's got losses, and he's a guy that's proven. Kind of showing the way for Canelo that you can have a loss, and as long as it's crowd pleasing, although in Canelo's case it wasn't, it was just a straight up shutout. but at least it was to the number one guy in the sport. We'll just give it that. You know, and they drained him with the 152. You know, I guess you can hang his hat on that. But regardless of that, he's still a brand. The guy does good numbers, and probably going to, you know, do even bigger numbers. And certainly another guy that HBO is like, dude, we want you to be the face of the sport. Or of HBO boxing in this division. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot there, you know, and Cotto was a guy that's kind of, you know, having this late career resurgence and late career, like, leverage. So it's interesting to watch, but I wonder if HBO and all of them are looking at him like, you know, we can't build for the future around Miguel Cotto. So my question to you, I mean, what do you think makes more sense? To me, Puerto Rican Day Parade makes more sense than, you know, do Canelo's people really travel to Vegas? You know, how big of numbers can he do there compared to what they can do at the Garden?
Here's the issue, though. The Garden will have a complete sellout, and I think it'll be a superior atmosphere because that Madison Square Garden, when it's filled for a big fight, there's an electricity and a mystique to that venue. There's no doubt about it, okay? So the boxing purist in me would say, you know what? I could do early June in New York again, but we live in the real world, Gabe. There's a financial reality that really exists. With whatever hotel puts up in Vegas for that fight, that financial pot will be bigger than anything the Garden can put up. Now, I'm being told it will not be at the MGM Grand if it's in Vegas. Bob Arum and his company are essentially banned. They're persona non grata. And I was told by another source that Canelo Alvarez looks at the MGM as Mayweather's Grand Garden. So I think there's a very good chance, unfortunately, and I know people are going to groan about this, and I'm with you, ladies and gentlemen, this could be at the Thomas and Wiggity, Wiggity, Wiggity Whack, which is always a logistical nightmare. And Jake, putting aside your geographic bias, where do you want Cotto Canelo to take place, Las Vegas or New York?
I think it would be pretty cool to see, you know, the networks. I mean, I know that it was split up boxing fans, but I think the buzz from mainstream media, two big fights on the same day, I think it would benefit boxing because of that. I mean, I think we'd be in the BI and all that. Two big shows on the same day, and Tony Kornheiser would be yelling about boxing dead or something. I don't know, but you know what I'm saying.
It'll be interesting. Before we let you go, Jake, Hopkins, Kovalev, who are you picking?
Hopkins, Kovalev, I've had enough of picking against Bernard Hopkins, so I'm going to go with the old man because it keeps proving me wrong.
Okay. Jake, as always, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Gabe, let's go out to FightFan718. He's at 347-307. He's been waiting patiently.
Got him. You got it. There you are. You're live on the next round, 347.
Mike, welcome to the next round.
Mike, talk to us.
Mike, my God, we bumped this guy up in line, and this guy does this to us? Oh, jeez, for
it
shame.
It hurts. That's like a knockdown of us. I'm going to another 347 just to spite him. You're the other 347. You're live on the next round.
Hello?
Yes, Whoa. Who is this?
How are you?
Yeah, this is Mike from the Bronx. What's going on,
Mike,
guys?
Mike!
You got another
you
Mike.
Are.
You didn't get the mic you were looking for, but you got Mike from the Bronx.
Okay,
all
how
right.
we doing?
Okay, my question is, because I got Kovalev to win the fight. Either by knockout or decision, I just don't see Kovalev losing to Hopkins, even though I give Hopkins his credit, Hall of Fame, all-time great. Now, after he wins, do you really think Kathy Duva would revisit a Stevenson fight, or that's just not
yes.
going to happen?
No, well, here's the thing. I think she'll revisit it at the very least to embarrass Adonis Stevenson and shine light on who she called the obstructionist, Al Haymon.
Okay. Do you feel the Gabe? Do you feel the same way Kathy Duva would do that, to just shame Al Haymon?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was surprised she, you know, they got what they wanted, to, you know, the big fight that Sergey needs, so they pulled the lawsuit. But I think there's still a general desire to keep a light on Al Haymon and have the media kind of follow that and dogpile on it, which, you know, I hope they do. I know Steve, you know, he's a pioneer on Al Haymon. I've written about Al Haymon, but, you know, everybody else, they write about him now, but it's kind of part of the landscape. It's sort of like Memo Heredia this weekend, just casually being in the corner of Wilfredo Vasquez Jr. Nobody really talked about it or said anything, or that he's working with Jesse Vargas right now. And that's kind of what Al Haymon has become, just part of the landscape that you write about, like a press release. But it's not, you know, need to keep digging. I'm not, you know, present company excluded, Steve. You're the best
yeah.
in the game.
Well, Mike,
but, you know,
Mike and Gabe, I want to point out about Adonis Stevenson. He fights December 19th, kind of a stay-busy type of fight, but there is another issue here that I believe he is slated to fight Jean Pascal as a mandatory, and the promoter up there, the very capable Yvonne Michel, has made it very clear if Adonis Stevenson comes out clean as expected in his next fight at the Bell Center, sometime in April or May, we're going to get that Montreal showdown between Pascal and Stevenson. So logistically, I just don't know if that fight could even be next.
So who is there? There's really nobody there after Stevenson and Pascal. Who's the next guy at light heavyweight? I mean, what, the kid Alvarez, who's unproven? Marcos Oliveira, who just got beat by Jurgen Brammer? I mean, there's nobody there.
No, there's nobody
Amara.
There. You know what? There's nobody there for Gennady Golovkin. So you know what you do? You keep fighting, you keep chipping away, you keep carrying the water, keep chipping away, and you build a career. And I was told by Kathy, if they win this Saturday, they're going to be back in March, which means that scheduling-wise, if nothing catastrophic happens, he could fight up to 3-4 times next year. If there isn't Archie Moore or Bob Foster to fight, well, that's not anything you can control. What you can control is your fighter's activity and continue to build the brand, which is something Kathy Duva and that company are very adept at.
This is true, but, I mean, at least for Triple G, I mean, there's the prospect of the next weight class. You know, at 168, you got a list of beautiful fights for Triple G. I mean, for a light heavyweight after that, cruiserweight, I mean, there's no excitement of watching Kovalev go to the cruiserweight division. So I guess that's all we can do is just hope he, you know, creates this niche and just stays in the division for as long as he can make the weight, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that, like, you know, you look at a top 10, like Fight News, you know, has a list of the top 16 guys. There's guys to fight. You know, I don't know if they want to fight him.
It's funny you say that, Gabe, because I have it open on my laptop right now. Like, I'm right on Fight News looking at the list. That's where I pulled up the name.
Yeah. But when you look at that name, and I mean, they're not going to, you know, he doesn't get in the Hall of Fame off of all of, well, maybe if you beat all of those guys, he does. But, you know, I'll go on a limb, too. You know, Pascal Stevenson, I kind of like Pascal a little bit.
I do too. I like Pascal,
you know,
in that fight.
I do, you know, and another Memo Heredia fighter. But, you know, he's got to get past John George. But, you know, I just, styles make fights, and I just think Stevenson, you know, it's a guy that got to the top, and I don't know if he's handling it very well. Doesn't seem like it.
Mike, we got to get going, okay?
Okay, you guys keep the good fight going, man. You guys have a good one.
Thank you very
you
much.
Too.
That was Mike in the Bronx joining us on the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of one, David Duenas. If you want to call in, phone lines are open, 347-215-7598. Down the line, we'll talk about the Showtime triple header in Chicago, and we'll go through some news and notes. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
I'm going to try this 347 again and see if they're off hold. 347, you're live on the next round. Boom, that's a double knockdown. That counts. In the 787, you're live on the next round. 787.
Hi, guys. This is Javier.
Early today. Early appearance there.
How you doing, guys?
Always rushing you.
Doing well.
Doing well, man.
Well, as regard to Cotto Canelo, do you think if the fight, I know the Vegas money will probably win out, but do you think there is any chance that if the fight is not in, if the fight is in New York, it could be something like the Yankee Stadium or the Meadowlands where he wanted to, when Aaron wanted to make the Cotto Canelo fight, the Cotto Martinez fight?
No, I don't. I think this fight is destined for casino money because to satisfy the financial demands of both who believe that they are A-sides, and they are, and you're going to have to, like, really skim every dollar to give to both sides. I you know, when you do events like that in a stadium or some of these exotic locales, sometimes there's a financial sacrifice, and I just can't see this fight. Now, personally, would I like to see this fight in a huge stadium so all the fans who want to attend, like 60, 70,000, like they did for Frotch Grove? Sure. But, again, our economic model in the States is much different than it is in the U.K.
Okay. Two more things, guys. First, you guys talked last week about the Pedraza fight that is coming up next week here in Puerto Rico. I know he hasn't been promoted right, and he's fighting at Morongo and things like that. But if he does win that fight, don't you think that he will lose DiBella and Gary Shaw also? But DiBella knows the New York market, and if he does get – he becomes the number one contender for the IBF if he wins. So don't you think he can make a living – In that area, the Puerto Rico, New York, and Philadelphia, the East Coast?
Well, if you mean making a living fighting in ballrooms and Indian casinos, yes. But do I think that he has the ceiling of Felix Verdejo, who I believe will be the next Miguel Cotto, Felix Trinidad? My answer is no.
Okay. By the way, guys, I got Hopkins. I'm Puerto Rican.
Ooh.
I'm Puerto Rican. We lost to Trinidad, and we never will bet against Hopkins again.
Javier, as always, thank you for the call.
Thanks to you guys.
347-215-7598. At a quarter till, we'll go through some news and notes. Gabe, who's next?
That's still the worst night ever, the night Tito lost. 914, this is live on the next round.
What's going on, guys? I got a quick question about this faggot Steven Espinoza. I see that, you know, he's getting bashed left and right about, you know, he's getting done dirty by Al Haymon. But I scrolled through his Twitter feed, and this guy just seems so confident. Like, I don't know what it is. He just seems like he's so confident and has a backup plan, and he knows what's going on, and he just, I don't know, because if that's the truth and Al Heyman is going to leave him, shouldn't that man be scared for his life? Shouldn't he be getting fired soon? Do you have comment on that, please? I'm clueless with this guy.
You know, I actually talked to Steven, and I'll be writing the story with other quotes in a week or two. This is a very busy week, obviously, but this is something that's not necessarily time-sensitive. And I asked him, is Al Heyman taking all this product to another network? In other words, is he going to leave you at the altar holding the bag? And he doesn't think so. But again, maybe he's not telling me the truth, or maybe he's hopelessly naive. But when it's all said and done, Gabe, it's on him. It's his job. And I think that anyone who is unbiased and can look at this with any type of real perspective will tell you, I think Showtime really took a step backwards in 2014.
There's no question. I mean, maybe there's some sort of, you know, funneling system that's going to go, you know, we've developed the guys on NBC to this wide market, we funnel them back over to Showtime. You know, maybe that's part of the plan, that he's going to spread around the roster. But right now it just looks like, you know, they're playing out the string. And that Steven kind of got played a little bit as, you know, Al shifted things. So, you know, maybe a lot of this, too, is that and you could see, you know, the acrimony between Oscar De La Hoya and when Oscar set himself up for that one, dude. Boardwalk Empire ended last week. But I think –
But Gabe, he didn't have an HBO subscription for at least the last 2 years. Give the guy a break.
You know what? And he's a busy DVR world. You know, he saved it. I don't watch the fights, you know, live a lot of the time, or the TV shows live. Who does that anymore? So, I don't blame him. But guys,
don't tell anyone that at the end Nookie Thompson got shot. Don't ruin it. Don't spoil it for Oscar. Okay.
Yeah. Seriously.
One more thing, guys. I'm seeing the Hopkins fight coming up this week, and I am clueless on who's going to win, but. I was looking at the middleweight rankings, and I'm seeing who the best American fighters are in the middleweight division. I'm seeing Caleb Truax, Jermaine Taylor, and I'm just wondering what happened. In your guys' opinion, what's the main difference from back then and now in terms of fighters? I mean, we've seen every other sport has gotten better. Offensive linemen are getting bigger. Everyone's getting stronger. And boxing seems to be the only sport that has declined. And, I mean, everyone says it's the mental toughness and, you know, this and that. What is it really? What do you guys think? If you had to pinpoint it on one thing.
Here's what I think. I think it's a matter of numbers. There's less participation in America specifically as it relates to boxers. And when your pool of talent is significantly diminished, guess what? So will your overall pool of talent. I think that goes hand in hand.
I think, you know, something that's turned into a really large project that I've been writing for a long time. I think that we're seeing the effects of the drug war as well that began and kind of ramped up in 1971, and it's been going on for, you know, for 40 years. And you're seeing kind of a slow genocide happening with the prison industrial complex, kind of targeting African American communities, and it's a terrible way to put it, but I mean you see families get split up, so there's not that kind of family unit. But then you just see, you know, how many deaths happen a year of young African-American males. So you kind of I think that was a lot of the American fighter. You still see Mexico still developing fighters. But, the middleweights always kind of came from us, it would seem, or overseas. So I wonder if it's that, you know, the death of the community center, of the police athletic leagues.
All right, listen, we got to get going. Thanks for the call, okay?
Thank you very much.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Here's another tweet from Bradley Edwards. Are Cotto/Canelo going to let Floyd take the prime May date? Gabe, I don't think so. When it's all said and done, I think that's one of the main factors of why this fight will end up May 2nd. I really do think, whether it's personal, whether it's a pissing contest, or whether it's just purely business, they want to take over that Cinco de Mayo date. I mean, hasn't Canelo made it clear that's a Mexican holiday that belongs to us/me?
Straight up. But I think it's, you know, you've got Cotto, you've got Top Rank, and you've got Golden Boy, and they're looking at the major competition, which is Floyd, and saying, let's screw him. You know, the best way to do that is to take over that date and lock him out of it, because it makes more sense to market it to those demographics. So, yeah, I have no doubt that that fight's going to happen in May. I'd be very surprised that they would move
on.
Because you also checkmate Floyd.
Yes, it does. And I'm just wondering, let's say, and again, we'll talk about this card later, Amir Khan, if he's the dance partner, I don't know if that's a strong enough B-side to challenge a Cotto Canelo fight. Here is a tweet from Evan Young, and he's talking about the 175-pound landscape. He says, Berturbiev is there. You're right, but I don't know. In 7-8 fights, is he really ready for the true world class? I want to see more. I think he is a bright prospect. I think he's a blue chipper. But, Gabe, again, I don't see a Berturbiev-Kovalev fight being realistic within the next at least 2 years.
I would say if he wins, the guy that he's going to end up with is Robin Krasniqi, because he's right below Jean Pascal, who has a fight. He's number two in the WBO, and number one is vacant in the WBA with Hopkins and Jürgen Brammer kind of sharing the belt. Number one's vacant. Number two is Robin Krasniqi. So I think if Kovalev comes out with it, that fight seems logical. I don't know, you know, how on the clock he'll be for the mandatory. He may be able to get one in between. But that's a viable fight. I'd watch that fight.
Here's one from DJ Macadocious. B-Hop will walk the tightrope like Nick Wallenda and pull it out by decision. Gabe, let's get back to the calls.
Also, you know, the mismanagement from USA Boxing of this amateur program, I think has a lot to do with the lack of development of the new prospects. I mean, it's pretty shameful what they've done. 724, you're live on the next round. 724.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. What's going on?
Good,
I just to talk about the like the Cotto, the Floyd, the head-to-head thing, and I'm just looking at Cotto's. And Canelo's past numbers. And, I mean, I think that could be a good conversation. I'll take this off the air. How about what if Floyd just stacks the undercard and, you know, makes the fights we want to see? You think that would be, they would, you know, he could do that or can that happen?
You know, people always talk about stacking the undercard. I know hardcore fans hate to hear this. The hardcore fan will be satisfied with the likes of Garcia Matisse, but the casual fan that buys or watches boxing maybe 2-3 times a year at best that really make up the surplus of numbers for the major shows, it's been a belief in years, and I don't disagree, they really don't care. It really is about the main event.
It is. That's what I mean about it. You know, they'd be checkmating Floyd by taking over that date because it forces him, if he's not going to, you know, it forces him to step his competition up and make a challenge, make a fight that everybody wants to see. And maybe he won't do that. Maybe, you know, he's locked in. He's got a guaranteed deal, which is the danger of guaranteed deals. So maybe he just does any old freaking fight. But I tend to think that he's going to push for something a little bit more. If he's getting bumped off of his date or he's deciding to compete. It'd be hard for Showtime to write a blank check and just say, you know, or write a check to pay for somebody like, you know, Guerrero or another Maidana kind of fight. I mean, it's got to be somebody that's legitimately dangerous. And, you know, again, if I'm Keith Thurman, I'm looking at Al Haymon going, are you holding my career back so I don't develop into somebody who could fight Floyd? Because I think that's the guy that could beat him.
And, guys, another issue. Not only is Canelo Cotto a battle of two of the biggest names, there's another dynamic we have not spoken about. I think is the most fierce boxing rivalry from a cultural standpoint. Puerto Ricans versus Mexicans. And that is huge. And that's like the Yankees and Red Sox of boxing. And that
yeah,
in itself is another thing that that Floyd Mayweather is going to have to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, that's, to me, that's the big one. You know, for Canelo, I mean, he understands. You know, he talked to me a long time ago about that, about history. I do think about my place in history. You know, I haven't, I'll let everybody else set that for me, but I do think about, you know, where do I want to be among all the great Mexican champions? And, you know, that's one of the big tests that you have to pass. If you're, you know, it's one thing to lose to Floyd Mayweather, the best fighter in the world, but he can't lose in his first big Puerto Rican clash. That will kill the brand for faster than anything. If he can do this, he's the goods for a good long while.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. And if you want to tweet us, Gabriel_Montoya and Steve UCN Live at the top of the hour. We'll go through the card in Chicago that was presented on Showtime. And then, of course, some news and notes. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
In the 510, you're live on the next round. 510. 510?
We got a knockdown.
Knockdown. In the, let's see, 516, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, it's Evan from Pennsylvania. How are you all doing today?
Evan, hey, welcome aboard. Welcome back. How you doing?
Yeah, good, good. I, you know, wanted to touch on the latest in the latest payment offering on Showtime last Saturday. And I just wanted to say it was the one saving grace about that card was I didn't watch it till Sunday afternoon in my DVR, and I got through it in about 25 minutes, so it made for some quick watching. I got the fast forward. The fast forward mechanism worked really well on my DVR. Just Abner Cotto, didn't we see enough of this guy when he fought Figueroa? I know he's Miguel's cousin, but the guy makes Matthew Abner look like Archie Moore. It's amazing. I mean,
Evan, this is boxing's version of Ozzie Canseco. It's bad. You're right. And it was disgraceful and funny and farcical when he's being coached to take a dive after that punch after the bell from Fortuna clearly missed him. The guy's not good. He's got a great last name. But if I'm Miguel Cotto, I would disown him from the family because what a disgraceful thing to try to do. And I got to be honest with you. I know some people are high on Fortuna. Gabe, I don't know about you. Didn't he look vulnerable on Saturday night against a good fighter?
Well, you know, I think he's like a Kirkland. You know, he's going to come out there and just goes for broke. I don't think his defense seems to actually tighten as the fight goes on, but he's still available right down the pipe, you know, for a right hand. He hasn't quite figured out how to defend that. But I thought he got better as the fight went on, and he just kind of, you know, he trained with Sergio Martinez, and I liked him. The first time I saw him was at his gym training, and I liked him. I thought he was a diamond in the rough, and I still do. He doesn't use his jab. He wings punches. His inside game isn't the greatest. But he can get you out of there with one shot. I mean, at this level, at least. I don't know. I mean, I think he's fun TV, but I think, you know, somebody's going to break him down, somebody that can kind of, you know, shoot from on high and keep a good distance and walk him into shots. Because, I think he is, like you said, he's vulnerable. But in his case, it's not necessarily a bad thing. If you can knock people out, get knocked around while doing it, so much the better.
Yeah,
well,
and
the stagnation at this point reminds me of Gamboa, you know, the real flash very early in his career, and now it's sort of, I don't know, you know, fundamentally it's all gone to hell, and that's sort of, I kind of saw it happen with Gamboa, so
Evan,
I see the parallels there.
That is a great comparison because I've always said about Fonfara, he's a hot and cold hit or miss fighter. He's either going to blow someone out on ESPN against these C-level hand-picked guys and look spectacular. But then I remember about a year or two ago, he had a prime spot against this white guy, I think on one of the Pacquiao undercards, and he stunk out the joint. And I remember they had a partnership with Top Rank, and Top Rank said after that fight, yeah, thanks but no thanks. Here's your pink slip. Get the hell out of here. And so I think that's a very apt description. And for the rest of the card, Tomoki Kameda I think is a pretty good fighter. I don't think he's the second coming of fighting Harada. I think he's a decent belt holder at 118. He'll make for some fun fights. And Andrej Fonfara, in my opinion, he's a tough, rugged guy. But, Gabe, and I know you're pretty high on Fonfara, but looking at Fonfara and the success that he had against Adonis Stevenson, isn't that a bit of an indictment then on Adonis Stevenson that he looked as vulnerable as he did against Fonfara?
I think so. I mean, you know, Fonfara is just like a meat and potatoes fighter. You know, he's not – I wouldn't call him a ham and agger at all. You know, he's workmanlike. His punches are nice and straight. I like his left hook. He's got good technique, but he is kind of one of those guys that will let you beat on him a little bit, you know, with his shell defense. And I think he absorbs too much and should stay tall and stay behind a jab and distance. But, if it was easy, everybody would do it. But I like him. I think he's just a TV guy. You know, I don't think he's – he'd maybe pick up a belt if he ever gets, you know, a vulnerable, if somebody vacates or something like that. I don't see him beating Kovalev, but, again, it could be a fun fight, you know. I think he's just one of those guys that's necessary for the business. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, Evan, Let's get to the brass tacks. Hopkins or Kovalev this Saturday night?
I'm going to go with Kovalev. As you said before, he's much more well-rounded than a Pascal. I sort of, he's athletic like Dawson was, but he can hit like a mule kick. So I don't see him knocking him out, but I do see some anxious moments for Hopkins later in the fight. And I was at Saddam Ali's last fight against a guy named Jeremy Bryan, who I thought might have won that fight. And I was just wondering if I'll hang up after this, but I was wondering if you thought this was sort of Golden Boy just cashing out on the Ali investment.
Here's what I think, Gabe. I think that if they're going to break the Cold War and do a fight with Top Rank to get their feet wet, they're not going to risk a loss with someone they believe has a real upside, like let's say a Frankie Gomez, for instance. And do they look at Saddam Ali as A, vulnerable, and B, with a limited upside? Yes, and that's exactly why I think they made this fight.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. It's, hey, if he wins, great. If he loses, well, you know, he's probably going to anyways, you know. But, you know, Fortuna, with Fortuna, you know, I think it's I'll say this for him. You know, I'm not so down on him. I saw Twitter kind of just, this guy's garbage and the top guy would beat him. But, you know, that's what the same thing they always said about James Kirkland. And, you know, I don't think he's beaten even the opposition that Kirkland did. But he's a guy that, you know, this could have devolved into a really ugly 12-round fight. And he could have allowed himself to get pulled into dirty tactics. It was a weird fight. He got hit in the back of the head twice, dropped. It's a foul. But the ref calls it a knockdown and then takes a point, which has made no sense whatsoever. But he could have allowed that to deter him and make this a stinker. Instead, every time he had adversity in the fight like that, he got up and really poured on the offense. And he really went all in. Like he figured, like, I should knock this guy out. And so that's what it seemed like he was trying to do. Was it flawed? Yeah. But, you know, I wasn't bored. I'll say that. You know, I bet you I'm going to be bored this weekend watching Hopkins. So there's that.
Evan
but, you know, Young. They haven't
Evan Young chimes in on Fonfara. He says he's a tough guy with a good punch, but he can't box. Going back to Fortuna, I agree with you. Listen, if you matched him up with a very vulnerable, at least from a punch-resistance standpoint, Orlando Salido, Gabe, that's a fun fight, and I think that Fortuna would absolutely have a chance to win that fight given the recent form and the vulnerability of Orlando Siri Salido. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines. Who's next?
In the 787, you're live on the next round. 787. I am a knockdown machine.
Yes.
860. The always CT.
What's
CT,
up,
what's going on?
Definitely like to talk about that doubleheader this weekend. I got the old man one. I think you guys bring up some really good points, and I think Kovalev brings more to the table as far as like style wise than what Trinidad did. Trinidad was very into his left hook, and I think Pavlik was was just following Hopkins all around the ring. I think Kovalev is stylistically he's a puncher with great foot movement. He gives himself great opportunities as far as getting himself in great position to land his power shots, like those body shots and those crushing head shots. But I think you guys bring up also a good point on Bernard Hopkins' behalf. There's questions of Kovalev that has been asked yet, and what happens when you go to these championship rounds and mentally when you have a power puncher like him, he's thinking knockout all the time. And like you guys said, what happens when he doesn't get that knockout? Will he get frustrated with the tactics of Bernard? But not knowing how to tuck his chin, roll with punches, and just mentally frustrate a lot of the heavier punches that he's been in against. And I think that will play a big role into this fight. I think Kovalev will have his moments, but I think he'll lower himself into that pace of Bernard Hopkins into the mid-range, mid-rounds, which I think Bernard Hopkins will take over and win a unanimous decision.
You know what I think is the key, guys, and this will be fought for, I think, at the rules meetings, and this is, again, where the promoters and the managers have to do their jobs, selection of judging, because I have a feeling that if it's the fight that we are forecasting and it's not Yvonne Durrell against Archie Moore, judging and how the interpretation of these scores round by round are going to go, I think will be absolutely pivotal.
There's no question. And the ref is going to decide how this fight goes. You know, it's going to come down to somebody that doesn't want clinching. You know, and that's key. I mean, I think, you know, looking at the fight this weekend, it was funny that the ref took, you know, points for hitting behind the head, but he just kept saying all night, like, don't hold, stop holding. Like, I want to see somebody actually, you know, get in there and affect a fight, you know, the way like Berto Colazzo. That, I think that's going to be one of the biggest things is, you know, the ability to minimize clinching from both the ref and from Kovalev.
And CT, who are you picking in the co-main? To me, is Saddam Ali the more skillful guy? Yes, but sometimes there are certain fights and matchups. It's not about the skill. There are certain intangibles, or in this case, maybe a tangible. If a guy can't catch and he's facing a hammer thrower, that's a bit of a problem.
Yeah, I agree with you guys in that fight, too. Well, I agree with you guys in that fight. I think Ali will, you know, have his way early in the first few rounds, you know, his quickness and his technical ability. But eventually, I think Abagu will break him down later on in the fight. I see Abagu stopping him around the eighth or ninth round with a nice shot and getting Ali out of there.
Okay, CT, you have been heard. You're on the record. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we have another half hour to go all the way up till Monday Night Football. This is the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. Steve Kim, Gabe Montoya bringing you boxing for 90 minutes. Gabe, couple of things here, news and notes before we get back to the calls. December 13th on Showtime, it is officially announced from the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. Amir Khan takes on Devin Alexander. Then Keith Thurman takes on the undefeated 39-year-old Leonard Bundu. And then for the WBO 54-pound title, Demetrius Andrade takes on Jermell Charlo, which means HBO and Showtime will have competing cards. And Golden Boy will actually have competing cards. So, Gabe, looking at this, let's go Siskel and Ebert. The Showtime card, thumbs up or thumbs down?
I don't know. I'll go thumbs up. I've been kind of negative lately, so I'm hoping for the best. Maybe it turns out to be an action-filled night, that the flaws of everybody make for action. So I'll go thumbs up. What do you think?
You know, I like it. I like this card. I don't think it's quite as appealing to me as the show on HBO. Here's the thing. The Andre Charlo fight, everyone's getting excited because people keep bringing up they're undefeated. Who gives a damn? My point is if each guy were the exact same fighter, and let's say they each had two or three losses, would you be as excited? Because to me, are you matching fighters and styles or records? Certain fighters, I'll say it again, certain fights are great on paper, but they're terrible on the actual canvas. That's the sense that I get as it relates to Andre Charlo. Keith Thurman's a guy I want to see more of. Khan Alexander, stakes are high, but I'll say it right now. I think Khan's style is all wrong for Devin Alexander. I think Khan skates away with the wide points decision on the night of December 13th, Gabe.
He can get whacked out of there with one shot, though. That's the beauty of the fight, you know.
And
I think it's interesting. You know, you got Alexander on the same card as this Andre Charlo fight, which I agree with you. It's kind of undercooked. I think Andrade's got excellent skills. He wants to be great. You know, really pushing for it. And I hope the fight itself. I hope he's aggressive in the fight. It could end up, you know, showing us that we have two guys in the middle divisions that are worth watching. I mean, Ronnie Shields has, Jermell Charlo. So this could end up being a good fight, but it also could end up being Bradley Alexander, which was, you know, two good guys, but they were undercooked. And so they kind of fought safe and kind of ugly. Well, it was just kind of ugly more than safe. But then, you know, Alexander to me is a guy that has learned how to be a pro. He's had some losses. He's had some bad fights, some tough fights. But he's still kind of bringing it a little bit more than he used to, I think, and getting a little more complete. Amir Khan, still searching for things, don't know much about him at 147, if anything. I think that's a very real fight, a dangerous fight. So, it's a thumbs up for it, but it also has real big potential for being crappy.
Yeah, I'm going to go with foot speed. I think Amir Khan's foot speed, I think, will be the difference. Gabe, speaking of December 13th, there are reports out of Argentina that Diego Chavez is not happy. He doesn't have a contract. The fight was never agreed to. You know, again, there was a press conference out here in Hollywood about a week and a half ago where they announced the fight. Now, according to Bob Arum, who, of course, again, would never lie to good old Steve, says the fight's on, don't worry about it. All I'm going to say is one thing. It better be on because I booked my flight for this fight card last week, and let's hope for the best because, Gabe, I want to see Lee Khorobov. I think that fight is meaningful in the middleweight division. I believe we're going to be sorting out a new Golovkin opponent for some time in mid-2015. And, Gabe, December 12th on Showtime, a special edition, Arizlande Lara takes on Ishae Smith. Gabe, am I going too far in saying that I don't see Ishae Smith winning a single round from Lara in this matchup?
That's not going too far. I guess that's what they mean by special. There's nothing special about this at all. I think it's going to be super boring. This could be brutal. This could be a brutal weekend of fights for Showtime if they're not careful. I mean, I expect, Abdermaris and Victor Ortiz versus TBAs to be interesting, but, and then probably quick. Keith Thurman, it's always fun to watch. It'd be nice to see him shake off some rust. But the Ishae Smith and Lara fight, combined with potential stinkers, that's just brutal. Meanwhile, I think you're going to have some action. Khorobov Lee is a hell of a fight. I think that's going to be a really fun fight. Two sharpshooters looking to shoot down the pipe and southpaws at that. Herrera Benavidez, I think that's it's a proving ground for Benavidez Jr. He's either going to do it or he's not, I think. And Herrera is a guy that doesn't hit hard, but he's the maestro. He fights at his own tempo, fights in a completely original and very frustrating way. I think it's an intriguing card. But again, Tim Bradley goes rounds, Herrera goes rounds. You could be looking at some, kind of like a good fight sandwich, certainly with the bread being 12-round stinkers or frustrating fights to watch. Interesting all around.
Going back to Twitter, Frank Matthews say, people say Kovalev is Pavlik. I don't see it. He has better footwork. He punches harder, and he can cut off the ring. Thoughts? Gabe, let's just be blunt about this. Isn't that just the old white-on-white comparison? Like, every single white small forward eventually gets compared to either Dirk Nowitzki or, if you're my age, Larry Bird. Isn't that what's going on here?
Yeah, that's a true comparison. I would agree with that. If we're picking
also,
up a
there's
few
a
more
big
calls
difference
here.
Yeah, well, there's a big difference though between Kovalev and Pavlik. Kovalev isn't an alcoholic. He's not a mess. I mean, I don't know how much that affected him for the Hopkins fight. But we all know that Pavlik had a lot of demons. He had a lot of skeletons in that closet.
Well, just in style wise, I mean, they're completely different. They don't fight at the same stance. They don't, they don't move the same way. One guy has power. I think in both hands. I think Kelly's, right was his shot. I'm sorry. They both are orthodox, but one is just kind of more. Kovalev kind of moves around and moves at odd angles. No one ever accused Kelly Pavlik of moving at an odd angle unless he was doing like a road check, trying to walk in a straight line. So I think I know that was cheap. That was rude. I'm sorry. Hey, we've had worse jokes on this.
I've said most of them.
But he's a cement-footed guy, and that's not Kovalev by any stretch of the imagination.
Another variable that people keep forgetting, and I was at that fight in October or November of 2008, that fight was at a catchweight of 170. So Pavlik, who at that point was the middleweight champion of the world, had to move up significantly in weight, and he got knocked around physically. Kovalev, you look at him, that is a real bona fide 175-pounder. That's another variable. Gabe, I understand we have some more calls. Again, if you want to jump in, we have about 22 minutes left on the clock before Monday Night Football, 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's get back to the phones.
In the 111, you're live on the next round.
Whoa, what happened there?
I'm not sure.
Hello? Okay, that's a knockdown.
Okay, I'll go to the other one. There's another 111. You're live on the next round. I think it's like a Skype number. Nope. All right. In the 917, you're live on the next round.
Damn, it's about time you guys got to me again, man. What's going on, man?
What's hey, who is
this? This is Francisco from Boxeo Mundial. What's up, man?
Oh, what's going on, Francisco?
You know what I mean? I was hearing Mike from the Bronx talking about Kovalev beating Hopkins. This fight is you know, nobody likes to bet against Hopkins, but I just think that guys that beat Hopkins had speed that gave him problems. You know, if you look at it, some of his losses came against speedy guys like Roy Jones, Calzaghe, Chad Dawson a little bit, you know. And I don't see him – I think he has too much experience fighting a guy like Kovalev. And I think that Kovalev, you know, yeah, he has punching power, but Hopkins knows how to neutralize that very well. And I think Hopkins is a smart fighter. So that's one of the reasons why I believe that Hopkins should win this fight on Saturday. Yeah.
Hmm. It's a tough matchup. There's no doubt about it. My greatest fear is that in the middle of the fourth round, there's nothing going on. Because if there's nothing going on, it's a slow tempo, and Bernard Hopkins is allowed to play ball control like the 1990 New York Giants, that's going to be a Bernard Hopkins night all night long.
Yeah, and you got, you know, you're talking about Cotto and Canelo having this fight here in New York would be awesome, but we know that the betting odds, you know that it's not going to happen. It's a fight that there's a lot of money put on it, and New York is not going to be that town. Would love for it to be here because it's right up the block from me, so I'd be able to watch it live, but I don't think that would happen. And I pick Canelo beating Cotto. I think, you know, I mean, Cotto looked a little bit strong fighting fighting Sergio Martinez. He looked stronger and a little thicker than I've seen him when he fought Austin
Trout.
Austin Trout. I can't even get his name right now. But yeah, you know, I when I look at Cotto, you know, now he looked a little bit strong, like I said, against Sergio Martinez. But Martinez did have two bum knees and moves kind of awkward. It was easy pickings for that fight. But I think Canelo's young, strong, can punch very hard. Cotto bruises very easily, lumps up very well. Since his fight with Margarito, I just don't see him getting past Canelo. I mean, he'll have his rounds, but I think that I think Canelo wins that one, maybe by knockout.
You know, I think I don't want to completely discredit the night of June 7th, what Miguel Cotto did. I'm someone who picked Miguel Cotto. There's a reason why I picked him that night. I thought he fought the shell of a shell of a shell of Sergio Martinez. So what might have happened that night, in which was a dominant performance, Gabe, we have to be honest, that might have been what I call the mirage.
Not for me.
Sergio seemed like a little bit taped together in that last one, you know? He just kind of just fell right all apart.
Well, we were sitting next to each other. Remember? You know? Well, we were sitting next to each other. You also said something about he's not being drug tested.
But they were drug tested ultimately. But it was, you know, to me it was very interesting. It was the way it was dictated. It was dictated at the last second. As it turned out, at first I thought there wasn't any drug testing, and then it turned out there was. But it was Cotto wanted it, but it was kind of like the fight was put together, and as I understood it, then they came back at the last moment and said, "All right, and we're going to do drug testing." Once the negotiations were done, and they got it through. But you know, to me, if you're not doing it year round, what's the point?
Yeah, and it was kind of weird that we've seen a guy who got manhandled by Austin Trout look that strong against Sergio Martinez. But like you said, it was a shell of a shell of Sergio Martinez. So that probably played a part in making him look bigger, stronger than he did in the past. The old Miguel Cotto was back, which I
Francisco, I was on the record. I remember before the Martin Murray-Martinez fight, and Murray was about a 5-1 underdog. Now, I had seen a lot of Martin Murray, and I thought he was a strong, sturdy middleweight. And I told everyone on Twitter that I thought Martin Murray was a very, very live underdog in Argentina. And I think me and Gabe, along with some other people, we had Martin Murray winning a close fight by a couple of rounds. But I remember halfway through that fight, especially after the knockdown in the eighth round, I remember I was at the house of Matt Swider, the Swider man, saying to him two things. Number one, I think Golovkin right now would stop Martinez in five rounds. But I said, whoever faces Martinez next will beat him. Well, that next guy happened to be Miguel Cotto.
Yeah, man. One more thing before I go. Why did they match Saddam Ali against Abrego? after what he did to Tomas Delorme. I mean, why would they do that? This guy's been knocking everybody out, almost everybody out, since losing to Timothy Bradley. I don't get why they did that to this kid. He just signed with Golden Boy. Why would they throw him to the Sharks like that? I mean, a brand
new
beast.
Francisco, you ever heard of the term sacrificial lamb?
Of course.
I mean, isn't that what it is, Gabe?
Yeah.
We could be wrong. We might be saying, oh, my God, Saddam Ali really surprised us, and we have to eat crow. But in my opinion, in this first thawing of the Cold War, I don't think either company was going to put up one of their marquee-level guys. I mean, they're still not married yet. They're still in the dating process, and these are the type of matchups you're going to get, that you're going to put up fighters that in the big picture, grand scheme of things, you deem a bit expendable.
I think it'll be good TV, though. I think that, it's going to be a very fun matchup, and I think these are good. I mean, I think, the Cold War isn't about we're going to build one star together. I think it's about we'll compete against each other and take shots at each other. And every once in a while, there'll be one of these. But I think it's good, man. I think the boxing is very healthy. What's going on to close out the year, and having a guy like Triple G sell the amount of tickets that he did at the StubHub Center, and if Kovalev does this, like you look at a guy like Fanfara, he's never going to be a world beater, but he might be a nice regional draw that a guy could feast on and go and maybe make some money over there, or his fans would travel. That's, and these fights, they're good. They're kind of popcorn fights. You can put a casual fan in front of Saddam Ali versus Abreu, and they're going to have a good time. It's all good.
Another thing I want to say, too, that you talk about what's hurting the sport of boxing, and you guys had good points, but one thing that I spoke with Manny Stewart about one time was about trainers, and he made that specifically clear that he thinks the boxing world has, skill-wise has diminished because it's not enough great teachers, good teachers, and most of these trainers who just put on mitts go out there and look cute or whatever, doing mitt work, but they're not really that good tacticians and don't even know what they teach their fighters. It's almost like a jockey riding a horse. They just ride that guy to the ground but don't know what to do when the guy is actually underwater. So, I think that's what's also hurting the sport of boxing is that, we don't have enough, and I think it's actually diminishing as time goes on, good trainers.
Francisco, I don't disagree, and I've said it before. We have a lot more mitt men than actual bona fide trainers. Francisco, we got to get going, okay?
All right, guys. Have a good one.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We have about 13 minutes. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you could do so at Gabriel_Montoya or at Steve UCN Live.
You know what I don't see enough of, and maybe it's because I haven't been in SoCal in a while. And I've seen some of the gyms out here, but I see a lot of mitt work. I see a lot of I do see a lot of sparring. I don't see a lot of guys spending a ton of time on the heavy bag, the good old-fashioned heavy bag. I just think that's the best way to learn how to move around your opponent, punch, with everything you've got, setting up your shots and where to be. The old-timers swear by it, and guys nowadays, it's about who can do the fancy, flashy mitt work, and I just don't think it develops punchers the way heavy bags do.
You know what John David Jackson once said about mitts? He said the mitts are the greatest cardiovascular workout in the whole world. And it's true, because when you work the mitts at a fast pace, I'm telling you what, you are gassed. Your lungs burn, your body really sweats like nothing else. But here's the thing, you're also practicing a lot of combinations that you'll never throw in a real fight. And that's the God's honest truth. I see a lot of this where guys are being told to throw these 18-punch combinations. Gabe, in a real fight, you throw an 18-punch combination, you are begging to be counterpunched up and down and being gone through like Swiss cheese. And the heavy bag for 85, 90 years was the predominant way guys sharpened up their punching. Joe Louis, Ray Robinson, Roberto Duran. And I agree with you. There's no bigger proponent of the heavy bag than me. And I'm actually seeing a very good union here between Eric Brown, best known for training Paulie Malignaggi and Peter Quillen, and Hugo Centeno in the last couple of weeks. And I got to tell you, do trainers make a difference? Absolutely. I think we're going to see a much improved Hugo Centeno on December 6th against James De La Rosa. And on Friday, when I watched them work after sparring, they didn't work mitts. They got right on the heavy bag. And I got to tell you, Hugo Centeno looked sharper and stronger than any time that I've seen him in the last 3-4 years. And I agree with you. There's a lot of trainers now that are, to me, masters of repetition. They're not necessarily really teaching certain things. And I actually think that's one of the reasons why we don't have great punchers anymore. It's all sizzle, no steak.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, the heavy bag, it just teaches you timing and how one punch leads to another in a really logical way. And while you're moving, and it builds strength from the legs on the way up. I mean, you know, I could probably get more out if I had been out of the gym out of hitting the heavy bag for like 8-10 rounds a day than just going and hitting weights and kind of pumping up. I always feel like it just gives it's like real strength. In the 707, you're live for the next round.
Hey, what's up? It's Carl.
Carl, what's
going on? Hey, what's up, fellas? I hear you talking about that Canelo Cotto fight. What type of numbers you think they expect to get out of that fight?
1 million. I don't think there's any doubt that's the over-under. They really believe that with the combination of this fan base of Cotto and Canelo, the fact it's the Puerto Rican-Mexican rivalry, and quite frankly, a lot of fans that hate Floyd, that want to see him punished, I think out of spite, they will order the fight, guys.
I think it does well over 1 million. You know, 1.5.
Oh, well over, Gabe. Really?
I think it's a solid fight. Cotto Canelo, I think that's – people like that fight, you know, because it's – again, it's guys with losses. But, you know, they're – I think, you know, Canelo's looking for that defining fight that he has to go and get. And because he's going up against a juggernaut like Top Rank, you know, nothing can be left to chance. He needs to go snatch it. And I think he learned that with Mayweather that, yeah, I'm a brand, but I still, when I'm fighting another brand, I got to fight for it. I think fans are going to love this fight, and they're going to buy it, like you said, in droves. And I think there is a certain segment that's going to buy it despite Floyd. But, you know, well, I don't know. Maybe there's 1 million Floyd fans that won't buy it. Who knows?
right. So, I mean, well, let me pose this question. Let's say that. That Floyd, you know what I mean, he actually were to fight Pacquiao, then what does Top Rank do?
They're not, trust me, I've been told that Top Rank's already making plans for Pacquiao's next fight, and I believe the front runner, believe it or not, is Jesse Vargas. I don't think that fight's going to happen. That's my personal opinion. I think both will throw their names out just for attention's sake and to promote their own bouts. But let's be realistic. Neither entity that's involved, especially Top Rank, they're not going to go out. Number one, I don't see Top Rank trying to alienate Cotto, and I don't see HBO, who just recently signed Canelo to this huge deal, ripping this date away for a fight that may be on Showtime. I just don't see that happening, Carl.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Hey, so when does this NBC deal start for what's the name, Heyman or whatever?
The rumor is it's going to start the week after the Super Bowl, which I believe would be February the 7th. Carl, before we let you go, we're going to put you on the spot. Hopkins or Kovalev?
You know what, man? I kind of been going back and forth. I really like Kovalev, man, but for some reason, man, it's just hard for me to bet against the alien man on this one, man. I just don't see myself betting against the alien on this one, man. I think he's gonna pull it out, man. I really do.
Okay, Carl. But the big question is, have you resubscribed to HBO so you can at least watch this?
Hey, man, I'm going to tell you like this, man. You can check out HBO on the radio, too, man.
On the radio. Okay, Carl, we don't want to incriminate you. Enjoy your weekend, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, we got a couple of more calls. And before we go on, two fights taking place overseas in Stuttgart, Germany. Felix Sturm takes on Robert Stieglitz, 12 rounds in the super middleweight class. And then in Krakow, Poland, Thomas Adamek takes on Arthur Spilka. And, Gabe, I tell you what, I'm actually interested in Adamek-Spilka because I believe this is a do-or-die situation for Adamek. If you can't beat Arthur Spilka, it's time to pack it in, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely. He's gotta get past this Spilka challenge. Otherwise, it's that time. I mean, either that or you stick around and you end up being the guy that people just beat on. You know, that's really the decision for a guy that's given and gotten so much out of boxing.
Yeah, it should be a fun event. I'm expecting a very good crowd. And I think these styles, I know Adam X has been not quite the action guy he was in the past. I think Adam X Spilka has a chance to be a very, very fun fight. Gabe, let's hit the phone lines before we wrap it up here.
In the 702, you're live on the next round. 702.
What's up, guys?
What's up, man?
Rob, what's going on?
I'm good. I'm glad there's some big fights back in the U.S. now, so happy that there's going to be a few going on in the next couple of weeks before the end of the year. So I didn't catch the beginning of the show. Is Cotto versus Canelo signed?
No, it's not signed, but there's just a lot of questions about when's that fight going to take place. Now, Cotto can say all he wants about, I want it Madison Square Garden, Puerto Rican Day weekend, but the economic reality is if Steve Wynn or another Vegas property puts up the money, I don't know if the Garden can match that. And also, I just can't see Canelo giving up home canvas advantage in this particular situation. And beyond that, I think HBO, Top Rank, and Golden Boy, they want to take over May 2nd in that Cinco de Mayo date from Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, I think that's a Vegas fight, no doubt about it.
So
why shouldn't it be? I mean, I have an issue when they take a guy that should be selling out in his hometown and putting him in Vegas and getting that casino fee, but this fight will legitimately sell out the MGM Grand or whatever venue they put it in.
Absolutely. Rob, we don't have much time here. Before we let you go, get on the record now. Hopkins or Kovalev?
I think Kovalev is going to stop him. He's going to stop him at any point in the fight. I just don't see how Hopkins is going to stand up to that power.
You and Gabe are going with Kovalev by KO. You guys are bold men. Very bold.
Yeah, but Hopkins going straight into that Hall of Fame in 5 years' time. No doubt about that.
Yes. I don't even think is a question. Rob, call us again. Thanks for the call, okay?
See you guys.
And we'll take one more call before we get out of here. Gabe, who's next on the line?
And before I do, just a quick reminder from the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. We're actively seeking advertisers, so if you want to advertise your business, your brand, on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network, the next round, or Leave It in the Ring Radio show, hit up Dave Duenas at leaveitintheringradio@gmail.com. Last caller, 714 for the win. You're live on the next round.
Hey, it's Lenny the Fightsmith.
Lenny, what's going on? You got about 2.5 minutes.
Oh, I was just calling in to listen, but I wanted to say what's up. I missed all of the show until like right now. But
you missed the greatest radio in the history of Western civilization. This should be one of your biggest regrets of your life.
I know. I got to watch it on.
But you can catch it on iTunes as well as on our Twitter feeds. So you'll be all right.
And I'll download the Leave It in the Ring Radio app. But I'll pick Kovalev stopping Hopkins in the first eight rounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
First eight rounds.
He gets him. I think he's too strong. I think Hopkins is going to try and make it dirty, but Kovalev is just too powerful, and I think he gets to him.
Interesting.
What's the possibility of Hopkins feigning injury if things are looking kind of hot in the first four?
I'd probably – that wouldn't surprise me. I don't see it as a clean stoppage. I just think that something's going to happen. He either doesn't come out, the corner stops it, or maybe he does get hurt or feigns injury.
Always a possibility in a Bernard Hopkins fight.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a possibility of getting a body slam or a DDT
or something bizarre, crazy.
Somebody
gets knocked out of the ring. But not drug testing. Weird.
Okay.
But,
all right, well, listen, Lenny, thank you for joining us, okay?
Thanks, guys.
All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of The Next Round. It should be a very interesting night in Atlantic City this Saturday night on HBO for light heavyweight supremacy, with all due respect to Adonis Stevenson. Sergey Kovalev, Bernard Hopkins, next week will review the action. So on behalf of the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network and Gabriel Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.